Eclipse Aviation's assets on the courthouse steps. Could Vern Rayburn be a bidder? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. This is the fourth and concluding segment of Jim Campbell's exclusive interview with Eclipse Aviation founder and former CEO, Vern Rayburn. Now that what's left of the company is to be liquidated, will this be an opportunity?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any thought in your wildest dreams of coming back and fixing this?
It's a good question, and it's a question I get often. But to be very, very, very blunt, I have faced one of those choice points that I think everybody comes up to at some point or other in their life, where do I move on or do I try to regain past glory? My ego doesn't require me to be able to say to all the critics and to all the bloggers and to all the cockroaches on the web and everything else to say, see, I'm right, you're wrong. That's not the way I function. That's not what drives me. And so I've made the decision it's time for me to move on, and I'm going to do something else. I don't know yet what that something else is because I like to do big things, and big things don't just sort of like pop out all formed and ready to go. I spent nearly 2 years of sort of thinking and planning and working and really developing a lot of the ideas behind Eclipse before Eclipse actually started. And so I don't see this. I don't have a press release to send out saying, here's next for Vern Rayburn. Besides which, let's face facts. This is a pretty tough time economically, and this ain't the world's best time to be starting something. And when this is going to thaw and when the world's going to get out of this really, 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 really tough period, I mean, the Dow hitting 6,800 today, is, I don't know. And people far smarter than me about a lot of this also don't know. So the simple answer to your question is no, I'm not going to go back to Eclipse. Do I think some of the plans that are being put on the table have a good chance of success? Absolutely. Frankly, the Phil Freeman plan is exactly the plan that I'd been recommending to a couple of other groups. Take time, stabilize the fleet, get the customers, you know, back fully supported, then take time to reestablish the supply base and start building airplanes again. I think they have picked a production volume that is commensurate with the price that they've announced. You know, I don't think they can sell more than 100 airplanes a year at $2.5 million, but I think they can sell 100 airplanes a year at $2.5 million, and I know that you can make money on the airplane at $2.5 million and 100 airplanes a year. So I think it's an intelligent, well-thought-out business plan. I think it has its own set of challenges, in particular since it's going to take, as I said, at least 90 days before there's any real attempt to start it back up, as to whether or not you can reassemble an awful lot of the people for whom the tribal knowledge of what it takes to build an Eclipse and support an Eclipse is really vested in. And that's going to be one of the variables that determine how long it takes to rebirth the company and also how much it's going to cost to rebirth the company. So there is an intelligent way. There's a right way to do this. I'm just not going to be involved.
I can certainly understand the cost emotionally and spiritually at this point for you. Let's look, though, at two areas that got pretty ugly over the past year.
Mm-hmm.
The hearings involving the FAA before Congress, all of a sudden it was this person did this person did that, and the FAA was doing you favors and good grief, the administrator was, you know, handing you this type certificate that wasn't worth anything and blah, 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 blah. And I'd like to get into what was going on over that. And, of course, this followed the issue with the throttle quadrant.
Yep, in Chicago.
And then also you got into a pretty good pissing match with a bunch of folks who, in most cases, were anonymous but certainly throwing rocks from the side, the blogosphere. I'd like to kind of address both of those.
Well, I feel like I've said pretty much that what is to be said about, you know, certainly the congressional hearings, and all I can say about the congressional hearings is in the end, nothing came of it.
But that describes so much with Congress, though.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the supposed smoking gun, the supposed heinous acts, the supposed, you know, fixes in type of crap, nobody was ever able to prove anything. The inspector general went around and examined a bunch of people, and here's the real simple fact. The whole thing was first off political by Oberstar, because there's some people in his staff that hate the FAA, and they look for anything they can do, because remember, put this in context. It was the same time American Airlines had their entire fleet of MD-80s grounded because their tie wraps were a quarter of an inch too further apart than the manual said they were supposed to be. So there was an immense amount of stupidity going on within Congress and the FAA, Southwest Airlines, who screwed up, who, by the way, screwed up in sort of a no-harm, no-foul way, and admitted it and went out and worked very hard to achieve it, but it turned into a political farce and a political circus, all driven by unions. And it's no secret that Oberstar, in particular, is a toady to the unions, and that what he did was heel-toed all the people who make lots of contributions to him. And there is no secret also, and in fact, the Democrats are pushing very hard in the House right now to actually undo the contracts with both the air traffic controllers and the unions, because the unions within especially the certification branch of the FAA are totally opposed to the whole idea of delegation of certification. They see it as a job threat. It's not a job threat. They can't even keep up with the work that they have. But they were trying to attack FAA management in the way that unions always do, which is they go out and they make it political. That's all that was ever about. And if it were anything more than that, I guarantee you it would have been discovered, because every single person with every single gripe under the whistleblower laws got to fully and completely expend their entire bladder on the FAA and Eclipse, trying to prove what evil people we were and how much we had done things wrong. And nothing was proven and nothing came of it. So other than say, well, if you want to just keep making up things, go ahead. You can keep making up things. But there was nothing there. There wasn't even any smoke there. Now, there clearly were people in the industry who would love to see us fail, because we were making their life pretty miserable for them, and they fed it. And frankly, I was very disappointed in some of the people in the GA sector, including some of the Gamma members, who went out of their way to feed some of this. I'm not going to name names. I know who said things. And you know, it is what it is, but the simple fact of the matter is we had a lot of enemies because we were making life on a competitive basis very uncomfortable. We're not the first company in the world that's been attacked by competitors by using regulators. Can you say Microsoft? If you go back to all the crap that Microsoft went through when they were trying to prove that as a quote-unquote monopolist they were harming the consumer, about the worst that the Department of Justice has ever to prove is that people probably paid about $2 more for Windows than they should have paid for it. But that's the way, particularly a large industry, that's the way competitors can use to go after another competitor, which is to use the government, unions, as their proxy. That's what really happened here. That's the truth of the matter. Again, I go back to, you couldn't actually prove, there was nothing found, there was no smoking gun of the aircraft being improperly certified or unsafe.
In a moment, Vern Rayburn has some very direct comments about the NTSB's role in the Chicago Throttle Quadrant story. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. It's time to wrap up the conversation between ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell and Eclipse Aviation founder and former CEO Vern Rayburn. On June 5th last year, an Eclipse 500 pilot on approach to Chicago Midway said he encountered wind shear and attempted to apply full power. He advanced the power levers with enough force to trigger a fault in the software, which left him with limited options to control thrust. He made a safe landing, but what followed put Eclipse Aviation in a very harsh spotlight.
We clearly had a design condition that we'd never seen in flight test or certification. And, oh, by the way, there was no certification standard for this. And our own high-precision engineering process induced the problem. Real simple, just to repeat it once again. If for a moment, and by a moment I mean 200 milliseconds, you had a mismatch in the throttle quadrant or an exceedance of range in the thrust levers, that generated a fault. That generated an engine control fault. There's always in any FADEC-powered airplane FADEC faults that are tied to the thrust levers being out of range or out of position. All the Cessnas have them. But it turns out that instead of 200 milliseconds, most of the Cessnas fault after 3 seconds. Yeah, that's about 30 times slower than what we'd faulted or declared a fault condition on the Eclipse. That was compounded in turn by, it wasn't a design mistake, it was a design decision, because if on the Cessna you get a throttle quadrant fault or you get a FADEC control fault, the engine rolls back to fly idle. It's the way it's designed. It's the kind of controller. It's the way the fuel controllers work. On the Eclipse, we said, hey, wouldn't it be better if you get a fault, you just sort of hold what you have? So we were the first company to use stepper motors on the fuel controller, which meant in turn if the stepper motor wasn't getting any signal, it just stayed where it was. In the case of Midway, it failed at full throttle. Then to prove that we could be too clever by more than a half, we said, well, maybe what will happen is you get one side fail, so let's look at the opposite side thrust lever and see what it's doing. The pilot, who I've done nothing but praise and who I continue to do nothing but praise for the way he handled it, did what sort of naturally he had been trained and over the years, very experienced pilot. He pulled back the thrust lever on the dead engine. When that happened and the fault condition cleared on the still remaining good engine, the good engine said, oh, maybe I should be back at idle. And it pulled the thrust back to idle. So it was this sequence of events that all actually occurred per the design, per the way it was certified by Transport Canada, by the FAA, and it caused the situation. Where did Eclipse screw up? We screwed up in two ways. One, we made, and this was a problem we had a lot on the airplane, and by the way, it's been a problem for most aircraft that attempt to go all digital, is setting of the ranges where you declare fault conditions is a very, very tough thing to do. I know C-10 operators, Citation 10 operators, who've been sitting at the end of the runway with a fault, and they get on their cell phone and call Cessna support, and Cessna says, just turn everything off and turn it back on. Don't shut down the engines, and all the faults will clear. That doesn't happen much because Cessna, you know, the Citation 10's been out over 10 years now. And it's not happening much in the Eclipse because we've been clearing these kind of conditions. From that standpoint, we didn't do a good job of really, truly assessing. And unfortunately, there's literally hundreds, maybe even thousands of these kinds of decisions as you build software. We tended to err on the side of being too tight on how we define faults, which in turn caused fault conditions to occur that really truly weren't fault conditions. They were more transient conditions. The second thing that was a problem is we inadequately trained our pilots for all the effort we put into training how to respond to a situation like this. Now, what happened? We immediately scramble a team. We go back to Chicago. We're there within about 6 hours of when the incident happened. But unfortunately, the NTSB had also decided. They impounded the airplane. We couldn't actually get on it. We then were able to download the data from our flight data recorder, which we call a DSU, which, by the way, the Eclipse is also unique in. We have more data about how the airplane works and flies than any manufacturer in this category of aircraft, period, because we're not required by regulation to have flight data recorders, but we put one on anyway. We were able to then download the data under the auspices of the NTSB. We analyzed it, and we said, here's what's wrong. We immediately set about putting together a patch. We wanted to look and see if we'd actually had a mechanical failure in the throttle quadrant, and it turns out that it was not a mechanical failure, contrary to the bullshit from the NTSB chairman. It was not excessive wear. It was actually a flexure in the linkage. In other words, it actually worked as designed, but we'd never had anybody put 40 pounds of pressure on the throttle quadrant, which caused the linkage to flex just enough to put the throttle quadrant out of range. But the NTSB impounded the throttle quadrant. Well, we didn't let that stop us. We went back to Albuquerque. We immediately started examining the fleet. We called the folks at Dayjet, examined the fleet, and we found a way to reproduce the condition. When we did that, by now we had the FAA fully involved. We said, we think we need to do an emergency service bulletin. They said, we think we want to do an emergency AD. We said, fine, we're there, we're with you. We worked all this out. And in the span of barely 48 hours, we had a, in fact, it was less than 48 hours, we had a complete solution, a reasonable understanding, sans the actual incident quadrant, which the NTSB was still holding on to. Somehow or another, the chairman of the NTSB felt this was a huge issue, but they couldn't speed up any kind of examination. It took nearly 2 weeks before we finally did get to examine that quadrant. But we said, we have enough understanding of the problem because of our data collection, because of our ability to replicate the problem. Here's the solution. We were dealing with the FAA. The FAA was being extraordinarily supportive. The FAA and Eclipse were working in a true partnership to make sure that this highly, highly rare and unique condition didn't occur again. And if it did occur, we wanted to make, we had written a temporary revision to the flight manual to show pilots how to handle it. That was when at 6:30 p.m., I think it was on a Thursday evening or a Friday evening, the NTSB sends out a press release saying, we call on the FAA to do an emergency blah, blah, blah. We had already agreed. We, in fact, were releasing that with the FAA. The NTSB came in, and to quote Mark Rosengar, who is the chairman of the NTSB, this is the way the game's played. The head of the NTSB didn't give a damn that there was a solution, didn't give a damn that his own investigators were saying, we don't think there's a real problem here, didn't give a damn that they wouldn't even let us examine the quadrant, and he sends out a press release late at night, after the close of business, calling for an emergency investigation when it was already all taken care of. Once again, politics driven by a guy who has no desire to do anything except put his name in the press.
So what about Vern Rayburn's desire from this point on? We'll have to wait and see. But he does still have his hand in aviation as a director of Icon Aircraft, which is developing the Icon A5 light sport amphibian. Jim Campbell is ANN's editor-in-chief. Vern Rayburn is the founder and former CEO of Eclipse Aviation. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.